Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star two. Our first question comes from Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hey,
good morning, Steve.
Just wanted to make sure, you know, you guys have the margin number here. I'm not sure if you gave a revenue number, but what is the, you know, absolute profit number, you know, in rough terms for the either the quarter or for the year? I think, you know, $7 billion was kind of around what you were talking about before. You know, is it around that number for the year?
You're talking about energy now, Steve?
Yeah, sorry, energy.
Yeah, no, I think we're still kind of in that neighborhood for the year.
Okay. And then one last question, just on the price there, and what you're seeing, you know, for hearing from your customers in the U.S., and anything going on there, in the U.S., and also, you know, just what's the price outlook, going forward?
You know, the order pricing, Steve, in the quarter was a little bit better than it was in 2Q, still down slightly for energy.
Went from -2.9 in 2Q to -1.4 on equipment in the third quarter.
In Q3?
Yeah.
You know, I think from a macro sense, Steve, we see good wind demand in the U.S. for 2012. I think the gas turbine demand is gonna continue to come from outside the United States. And, you know, I don't see. You know, I think the, you know, kind of what the guys told you in the investor meeting in September around pricing still kind of holds. I think it's firming, but it's, you know, it'll continue to be a competitive market.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Scott Davis with Barclays Capital.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hey,
Scott.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm wondering, can you give a sense of the outlook on healthcare? I mean, growth is good, and, you know, I wonder when we get to 2012, is there, you know, I mean, given what's going on in Europe and such, I mean, what are your customers telling you, you know, on spending plans?
So, you know, Scott, I'd say Europe and Japan, you know, if you think about those two markets in the second half of this year, probably cost us about $70 million for operating profit, something like that, in the second half, just those two markets. And I don't, you know, I think Japan could get better. I think Europe, we're gonna stay cautious on Europe. The U.S. is surprisingly strong. You know, our orders in the U.S., as Keith said, were very solid. And then the growth in the emerging markets are booming. So we see phenomenal demand globally. You know, Scott, I think the R&D expense in Q3 was more driven by some of the investments we're making in home health and healthcare IT. You know, we're launching this Equilibria product in healthcare IT, more so than what I would call classic MR, CT type of activity. So a lot of the R&D that you see is really more in the you know, life sciences, IT, home health space. And, you know, when we think about 2012, I mean, we haven't done our operating plans yet, but when we think about 2012, I think the profile of mid- to high-single-digit revenue growth, you know, double-digit op profit growth is still the way we think about 2012. Keith, I don't know, would you add anything to that, Keith, or?
No, I think, you know, our strength clearly is in the emerging markets. You can see the orders growth. We've invested to localize our business and globalize our business. I think the team is doing a great job of that. I think U.S., as you said, is a little better than we thought, and we got to do a good job executing there. And Europe's probably gonna stay slow based on reimbursements and the current stress from a government perspective. So I think it's a pretty good outlook.
And Jeff, I think I could ask this question for pretty much any of the big segments, but so maybe I'll just ask it in a bigger picture sense. I mean, how do you feel about your cost structure? You know, you know, obviously, you had a weak pricing environment, but, you know, maybe that's also a reflection of you know, your cost structure could have been, I mean, I guess, theoretically, a little better, and you could have shown a better incremental margin. But, you know, if we do hit a bit of a roadblock in 2012 and things slow down, I mean, where do you, you know, what's your confidence in at least on the cost side?
You know, I'd say, Scott, when you look at the variable cost productivity and, you know, what we're doing in sourcing and direct cost, I think that continues to be very strong. We have increased the investments in global growth, and we have increased investments in R&D. We think a lot of those investments are in place and are showing up in the revenue line. You know, our organic growth is great. Our growth in the growth markets is superior to our peers. Our growth in services is superior to our peers. So, you know, we think, Scott, that we are well positioned for 2012. That's really the basis on which we've made these investments, our 2012 and 2013. Our R&D expense as a percentage of revenue will decline in 2012. But I think when you look at our backlog, when you look at our organic growth, when you look at our revenue run rates, they are extremely strong. And I think fare well versus our peers. And that's really why we made the investments.
I think on the back office, we got to continue to streamline. I think we have opportunities. We're investing in IT projects to try and consolidate and get consistent global ledger platforms. We're going to look at back office outside the U.S. on a broader basis. So I think there's always opportunities there for us, Scott, and I think that will help us to kind of offset some of the funding that we've done on the growth side.
Fair enough. Good luck, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Our next question comes from the line of Deane Dray of Citi.
Hey, Dean.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Hey, Dean. Hey, this new projection of double-digit earnings growth in 2012 really puts GE among the very few companies today to draw the line in the sand and say, you know, you can have that kind of earnings growth. And it's certainly welcome news, but can you share a little bit more of the assumptions? Most importantly, kind of the geographic splits, core revenues, and can we start there, please?
You know, why don't I start, and then Keith, you fill it in. I'll start with GE Capital, Dean, to just say, you know, kind of arithmetically, we continue to progress. The returns expand, the returns stay high on the E&I base. And the amount of red assets run off. And so I think from a GE Capital standpoint, a double-digit growth is kind of arithmetic. And then when I look at our two big businesses, aviation and energy, extremely strong backlogs, tremendous product profiles, really good geographic mix. And I would say comparing to At least in the case of energy, easier comparisons in 2011 versus 2010. So I like the way our two big industrial businesses are positioned, but I particularly like the backlogs and how they're positioned. From the standpoint of transportation, you know, kind of more of the same as it continues to expand, and healthcare I described earlier. So, you know, our belief is we ought to see very attractive organic growth and expanding margins industrially in 2012. And a lot of our positioning is in growth markets, you know, so a lot of our order strength and a lot of our positioning is there. And Dean, I think it goes back to Scott's question. You know, we positioned to win, you know, in 12. I don't think the environment has really surprised us so much, and we've positioned our company to win in 12 in this kind of environment. So we got the goods, I think, from a product background and from a backlog standpoint. Keith, anything to add?
Well, I don't have specific geographic numbers, but take a look at kind of where we are, you know, third quarter year to date, 58, 59% of our revenues outside the U.S. Our orders are up 16%. It's pretty well split domestically and globally. We are getting a lot of growth out of the emerging markets. That's going to continue. Our backlog is very strong, and it's going to, you know, we're going to continue to get 59, 60, 61% of our growth out of the outside the U.S. So I think in terms of that's one way to look at it. The other thing is I think as we get into the fourth quarter here, we're going to do our operating plans, and obviously in December you'll have a more thorough discussion, you know, of what we think the framework is by business. This framework is off of our growth playbooks that we've done in the summer and off of our business updates that we've done after the third quarter outlook, and feel pretty good about it.
And $191 billion of backlog is the most backlog we've ever had. And, you know, we're really not counting on much in the U.S. and the gas turbine field and stuff like that. So we're just not looking for that much from the developed economies.
You are going to see a good wind activity. As you saw the orders in the quarter, that's going to help, and obviously that's going to be one thing that will be positive in the U.S. In 12, we'll have a good amount of wind activity as people work to get those units in place to qualify for the production tax credits that are available.
And just on that last point, for the all eyes are on the energy margins in 2012, and at the analyst day it was a plus 15. So will we get a better sense of how much plus 15 there is in the fourth quarter turn?
Well, it should be the starting point. You know, we've said they're going to improve off of where we've been this year. They've got a big volume quarter, and it should be directionally what we're trying to achieve for 2012.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dean.
And our next question comes from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura.
Good morning, Shannon.
Hey, Shannon.
It looks like they have dropped from the call.
Okay.
We'll take the next question with Christopher Glenn from Oppenheimer.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, good morning.
Chris, good morning.
Just wanted to take, a segment angle to Scott's question, cost structure or otherwise. But at Energy, can we have a little more detailed walk on how profit's actually down on 25% revenue growth and some added perspective there?
Sure. You know, if you look, I'll do it by the margin percents maybe, Chris.
Okay.
So in the third quarter last year, we're a little over 20% margins. The wind business alone drove margins down by 2.9 points in the energy segment. A lot of that was price, as I mentioned, and some of it was the mix. M&A, acquisitions drove margins down by 0.6 of a point. And then our global programs, investments, and the balance of plant revenue that we talked about account for the other 1.3 points.
Okay. And then just directionally with aviation, you get 2X, the Gen X shipments in the fourth quarter. Would we be looking at a similar magnitude of margin impact sequentially as we saw 2Q to 3Q?
I'll have to take a look at that. I would say that I think that, you know, with a increase in the Gen X engines, you know, you'll be closer to flat on op profit V than you will up 7. I think that's probably a way to think about it. I don't have the final aviation number for the fourth quarter, but it will be less of a positive V, obviously, in the fourth quarter than what we had in the third quarter, just based on that Gen X ramp.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Hey, Chris.
Our next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Sprague of Vertical Research.
Thanks.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. Hey, just a question on capital allocation. Keith, you mentioned just things improving at capital and maybe in position to start some bulk originations. I think investors are kind of expecting a dividend out of capital, and maybe it comes back in share repurchase. And I've even heard people talking about a dividend beyond kind of the normal December hike. Is that the way to think about things? And how does cash flow and capital allocation actually play out in 2012?
Well, we expect to have a stronger CFOA from our industrial businesses in 2012 than 2011. We won't have the drag of not having the MBCU cash year over year, and we'll have the growth in the industrial businesses, including the acquisitions and the growth in our earnings. From a capital perspective, you know, our plan is to have a dividend out of G Capital back to the parent in 12. You know, we've got a lot of work to do on that. We've obviously worked hard over the last couple of years to strengthen our capital ratios. You saw the numbers there. They're very strong compared to peers and other standards out there. As you know, though, the Fed just became a regulator in mid-July. It's very early in the process of them getting to understand us, and we're working constructively and transparently with them. And, you know, we'll have to give you an update as we go forward with them on that. Our objectives are still the same, and we've got a lot of work to do to get at that.
You know, Jeff, I think we expect to have a lot of cash to allocate in 2012, and we, I think we still want a balanced approach. We like the dividend growth. We like doing small deals, we think, the energy team has plenty on its plate right now, and so we'll be selective in terms of where we do M&A. And then buybacks, we've done I think that being able to do $1 billion in the quarter plus the Berkshire preferred is $4 billion in Q3, which is going to benefit investors next year. So we'll continue really with a balanced and disciplined capital allocation approach.
And then just finally from me, just thinking about R&D and Aero going into next year, you know, you got the Gen X ramp. You know, there's some comments out there about fuel burn on Gen X. I don't know if that's kind of normal new engine stuff, but can you speak to what you think you need to spend in 12 on both Gen X and LeapX, and can Aero margins actually drift higher next year in the face of that?
You know, I think we're basically, you know, I think we're just kind of in the normal launch on the GNX, and the performance improvement programs really look to be either on or ahead of schedule. So we feel good about that. And then, you know, again, I think for next year we've got a shot at expanding margins in aviation. And you know, we are launching these new engines, but that's really where our focus is. And we've got a lot of the GNX is going to be in the run rate this year, you know, in terms of the shipments. So we're kind of don't have that headwind when we look at 2012. And I think that's a real positive for investors, and that's what we're kind of getting behind us this year.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
And our next question comes from Julian Mitchell with Credit Suisse.
Thanks.
Hey, Julian.
Hi.
Hi, Julian.
Hi. I just wanted to follow up on energy infrastructure pricing, just in terms of the, you know, just the dollar effect negative from price on your earnings. I guess for this year, year to date, it's maybe $400 million or something for energy infrastructure as a whole. The full year is maybe, you know, nearer $500 plus. You know, when you were saying you feel good about the energy backlog, I understand the volume outlook's improving, but does that also mean that the price hit to your energy infrastructure earnings in 12 should be a smaller number than we're seeing in 11 right now?
Yeah, I mean, I still expect it to be negative next year, but it's not nearly going to be of the magnitude that it's been this year. You know, I think this was a particularly tough comparison year, you know, Julian, just given the wind margins in 2010. So I think that's just the run rate that we see to be much less of a headwind next year than this year.
Okay, thanks. And then just within the oil and gas margin specifically, you know, obviously down a fair amount year on year. Is there anything going on in terms, I understand there's probably some dilutive effect from acquisition integration, but is there anything going on in terms of the pricing environment? And maybe, you know, you've seen around oil and gas pumps, a couple of companies in the past 10 days have talked about slowing orders because projects are getting pushed out. Could you just give an update on sort of the volume order outlook and also what the effects from price are in oil and gas specifically on the margin? Thanks.
Well, the volume continues to be incredibly strong, as you saw in our orders on turbo machinery and also drilling and production. You know, for the quarter, I can do it again on an op profit walk. You know, we had a little over 16% op profit in the third quarter 10. Negative price was about $30 million. That's 1.4 points down. The acquisitions were about 7/10 of a point. So, again, we're earning money, but at a much lower margin rate than our core business. And then the global investments that we've been making are about another 7/10 of a point, getting close to the 13% they had, 12.5% they had in the quarter.
Great. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Julian.
And our next question comes from Terry Darling with Goldman Sachs.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Terry.
Yeah, a couple follow-ups. You know, first on capital allocation, do we have any update on or sense of timing on the completion of the Fed process? And is that completion a necessity in terms of moving on the dividend? You know, are those two tied at the hip, I guess?
Oh, they are. You know, we're working cooperatively with them. You know, imagine being parachuted into G Capital in July and saying, you know, the whole place. They've got a lot of work to do. We're cooperating with them. I think we're just going to have a constructive, open dialogue. We're having a lot of meetings and a lot of work is going on. But, you know, we're gonna respect the Fed, and we're waiting for them to work cooperatively with us on when we make a decision on a dividend back from G Capital. I think they've got a lot of learning to do, and we've got a lot of information to share with them, and we've got to work constructively on that. So it does matter, and it does depend on them, and we're going to work cooperatively with them to get to that point.
And Keith, just to be sure I'm clear there. So is just the dividend up from capital, or any dividend at
the
beginning
of capital that I'm referring to.
Just the dividend out of capital.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll work with the board, as we always do, on the dividend plans for GE in total. And Jeff mentioned, you know, it's a real priority for us in terms of capital allocation is the dividend to our investors. And we want to keep around a 45% payout ratio. And, you know, we feel we've got a pretty good outlook to deliver on that.
You know, Chair, I just want to make sure that that is well understood, that the GE dividend to our investors is a real priority. I think that moves really independently of the Fed process, and from the board and from my standpoint, it remains an extremely strong priority for the company.
Helpful. And then, you know, in terms of the capital allocation thought process between acquisitions and continuing this kind of pace of buyback, you know, with some of the dislocation asset prices, seem to be some opportunities out there that you mentioned on the capital side. What are you seeing on the industrial side, or should we think that buyback remains a priority, at least in the near term?
You know, Terry, I kind of take it segment by segment. I think the energy guys have enough on their plate right now, so I really think, you know, we are full throttle execution mode in energy. Aviation and healthcare, if we do anything, it's going to be, kind of on strategy and accretive and, in our wheelhouse and in the size range that we've talked about in the past. So, you know, we always want to stay opportunistic. We always want to stay focused on our key growth segments in the future. But, you know, like I said earlier, I like our backlog. I like our product profile. I think we have positioned ourselves that, you know, and again, nobody can predict the environment. Right, we live in a more volatile world. But I think if you look at our backlog and our product profile, the odds of us having organic revenue growth equal to or greater than our peers is quite high, just with the stuff we've got in our backlog right now. So we don't think we need acquisitions to deliver on what the company needs to do for our investors in 2012.
Okay, and then just lastly, Keith, is there any way to put an EPS number on the dilutive effect from acquisitions all in this year and what you are expecting EPS accretion all in next year based on the deals that have been done at this point?
I don't know about an EPS number. You know, in terms of the results, we're going to earn somewhere around $300 million in the deals for 2011. I think the offset to that's mostly in the energy and oil and gas segment. The offset to that is in the BD costs and some of the restructuring we've been taking at corporate. You know, it's pretty much a wash for 2011. You know, we will have incremental growth in 2012 from the acquisitions. It should be quite healthy, and we'll have a real decline in the offsetting costs that are coming into corporate. So I think the acquisitions are going to be pretty accretive next year. I don't have an earnings per share, but it's going to grow from the $300+ million at the energy segment into 2012 just based on a full year. We also expect to start getting some of our synergies, and you'll have a nice offset by not having some of those costs at corporate.
It's a good question, Terry. We'll make sure that we show that in December.
And sorry if I can, one more. Any tax thoughts for 2012, Keith, that you'd want to start us out with here?
I really don't have a framework for that yet. I'd really love to wait until kind of the December outlook to be able to give you a better look at what we think 2012 taxes are.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Thanks, sir.
Our next question comes from John Inch of Bank of America.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, John.
Hey, Keith. Were there gains in the CLL business? I'm just trying to – I realize the provisions were down, but I'm just trying to – understand a little bit why exactly the profits were up 55% if the revenues were flat? Or are you getting better spreads or what?
There is some better margin in there. I didn't have any gains of big amounts over, you know, $50 million that I recall in CLL. In terms of the walk of profitability, you know, from a net income from third quarter last year to this year, the losses were $120 million and the base income was up $125. A lot of that was margin.
And is that margin in North America mostly, I'm assuming?
I don't have a split of where it is. I see there are improved margins in North America. That was a lot of it. There's a little bit of margin improvement in Asia, and margins are about flat in Europe.
And then can I just ask you guys, appreciate the color on the Europe profile. Maybe one of the ways to kind of stress test this would be to just sort of look back and try and understand a little bit what your experience was in Europe in the previous recession. Just because all else equal, North America looks still pretty resilient, but Europe seems headed for a recession. So the question kind of comes down to, if we do roll into that sort of an environment, what do you think the risks of some sort of a some sort of a haircut to the asset base and the associated book equity would be under that scenario? Is there a way to think about that? I mean, I realize a lot of the loans are collateralized. The GECAS planes can be flown out or reassigned. I'm just curious.
Look, we got a couple different stress cases. If you have a normal slowdown in the economy, you're going to have higher delinquencies, and that'll roll through in sort of normal losses. I don't think there's anything precipitous about that. We have run other stress cases that are a lot tougher in terms of the total capital markets look in Europe, and we still think those are manageable. But I think if you're just talking about Europe's going to, look, we're expecting Europe to have slow growth. They're going to be deleveraging, and there's going to be some volatility. And, we lend money on that basis. So I think we would have higher delinquencies, and as you have higher delinquencies, you probably will have some higher losses in Europe. But, our base stress test with a scenario of a little slowdown in Europe is very manageable for us. A normal credit cycle, I would say.
Just lastly, Jeff, as you think out, is there some reason why you wouldn't want to prospectively manage capital lower than the kind of 30 to 40 target over time? I don't mean quickly, but over time, or is there some strategic reason why 30 to 40 you feel good about that positioning today?
John, what I've said is, right now what we've tried to give to investors is a sense of what's in our control. And I think we've kind of executed since the financial crisis. Those things are in our control, so that's why we talk about 30 to 40. I think if we look out over time, it's just, to me, it's what's the way to maximize value of GE for our investors, and what's the right split of businesses, and what's the right capital allocation. And so we're gonna have to reflect on that, once we kind of go through the processes we're in today. But it's gonna be how do you maximize shareholder value? What's the right split?
Yeah, fair point. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Our next question comes from Nigel Cole with Morgan Stanley.
Oh, thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Nigel.
Hey, Nigel.
Yeah, so I understand the Fed's still doing their work, and there's not much to say there, but any sense as far as, whether GE Capital Services or GECC is the right entity? And, both have, strong Tier 1 ratios, but the 1.3-point difference between the two has a meaningful impact on the potential surplus capital that you could maybe bring back to the parent. But any sense on whether it's GCS or GCC?
We're still working with them on what's going to be the holding company level. I think you've seen we've strengthened the ratios in both entities consistently over the period, and both are manageable. There's a runoff operation in GECS of the runoff insurance operations that don't relate to the ongoing running of GE Capital, and we'll have to see which entity is the right one to land on. At the end of the day, we're going to be responsible for both. we're consolidated at the GECS level, and we'll be responsible for all the operations of that entity, no matter which gets picked for the regulation. The regulation is going to be throughout the company, is the bottom line, Nigel.
Okay, and then just one final one. Obviously, you've got a big maturity coming up in 2012 in GE Capital, $81 billion, but you've also got a lot of cash in the balance sheet. How much of the $83 billion of cash is earmarked for those maturities?
Well, we plan on having a very solid funding year in 2012. We're going to end the year, just coincidentally, somewhere around $87 billion, which is very close to the number we have today. We plan to issue probably $25 to $30 billion. We're still working on our plans for next year. We did obviously 25 this year. We did 24. We'll do 25. We've got alternative funding growth of $5 to $15 million. We've got $1 billion. We got the business cash flows, and then we have the maturity. So we're planning on bringing that cash pool down substantially next year. I mean, basically, we've immunized a lot of the long-term debt maturities in 2012 with cash. We borrowed it in advance, and so we're planning on bringing that cash pool way down in 2012, by the end of the year, be closer to 50 than it is to the 80 that we have today.
And what's the impact on earnings? Because obviously you have a positive spread as you pay down debt with cash.
Well, I think you'll start to get some of that in 12, and you'll get some of that in 13. Right now, the negative carry is several hundred million dollars a year for having all this excess cash.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Adam.
And our final question comes from Steven Winiger, Sanford Bernstein.
Thanks,
hey,
Scott,
Steve.
For fitting me in.
Steve, how are you?
Good. All right. So just, I guess, big picture for a second. You have been talking about, you know, double plus signs in that 2012 since your last outlook last year in December. What's your conviction or confidence level as we start talking about that energy number, the tax rate, the dividends? I know, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here, but if you sort of gauged your confidence level around getting that on each of those points relative to where you've been over the last, I guess it's 9 months or so, talking about this that whole time.
You know, again, our order rate, backlog, market position, you know, and by market position I mean our share position in key products, has only improved since the first time we, you know, we've talked about this. You know, clearly we've got to be mindful of what's going on in Europe and things like that. But, you know, just our, when you look at our backlogs in aviation and energy, they're quite strong. And, you know, we've got a full year carryover of the acquisitions, what Keith talked about. We've done a good job from a capital allocation standpoint, retiring the preferred stock. That's behind us. I think in GE Capital, you're going to have a better commercial real estate year next year than this year. So I think if you look at the big drivers, you know, Steve, it's just, it's either in backlog or the momentum we had in Q3 helps solidify that view going forward. So,
I think it does depend, obviously, on what happens in the world. You know, our view is we're going to have a slow growth developed world. We're going to have slow growth in the U.S. and slow growth in Europe. Europe could be flat next year even, or, you know, maybe it's in a recession. But it's not, you know, we're not planning on a real huge decline in Europe or in the U.S. And in the developed world, we expect to have continued good orders momentum. And it's very broad-based. It's in all these growth regions that we're operating in. And we think that's going to continue with some volatility. I don't think, you know, you don't think Brazil goes straight up forever, and China will have some slowdowns from 9% to 8% or whatever. So we're planning on a slow growth developed world, continued high growth developing world based on the businesses we're in. We're in heavy infrastructure, and that's where those capital expenditures are being made in those growth regions. And we've got a lot in the backlog, as Jeff said. We're going to go through our operating plans here in the fourth quarter, and we'll give you a good update in December. But, you know, it feels pretty good about where we're positioned today. The fourth quarter and the energy performance is going to be an important indicator for us. We've got to execute, and we'll have to show you that. And we feel good about that outlook, and we'll give you an update, as we said, in December.
And that pricing in the backlog, you're saying it is not getting any worse at a minimum and getting better, really, the way you're looking at it.
I think the comparisons are certainly easier, obviously, when you look at what we've had to deal with the margin compression in 2011. I think, you know, we're still going to have price pressure, as Jeff said, in 2012. I hope it's less than what we had in 2011. When you look at the full year, we got a lot of orders to come to see what happens with that in 2012.
Okay, and you took provisions up to, you know, over $1 billion this time, so but not by a huge amount. Was that provision increase, I mean, how much of that was just driven by your current loss experience versus your concern about what you're seeing in Europe and other places?
Yeah, the main driver in the quarter was what we talked about. The retail business went back to a more normal level of delinquencies. We had in the U.S. About $300 million impact in the provision in the third quarter versus the second quarter. That was driven by delinquencies in the U.S. retail business going up 39 basis points. Now, on a historic basis, you go back 3 or 4 years and you average the third quarter versus the second quarter, it normally goes up 55 basis points. So a little better than historic, but as we planned, and that's the main driver for the provision change upward in the quarter.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Great. Just a couple of items to close out, housekeeping and announcements. The replay for today's webcast will be available this afternoon on our website. We'll be distributing our normal quarterly supplemental data for GE Capital around noon today. And then I do have a couple announcements for upcoming investor events at year-end. First, we will host our GE Capital investor meeting in person on December 6th near our headquarters site at Norwalk, Connecticut. We'll send out details once that's finalized. Second, our annual Outlook investor meeting with our chairman will be in New York City at the Normal Place on December 13th, and more information will be sent out closer to that date also. Finally, our fourth quarter 2011 earnings webcast will be on January 20th. As always, we'll be available today to take your questions. Thank you very much.